The Democrats in the House of Representatives passed Speaker Pelosi's 1,815-page, $3 trillion bill to radically change America on Friday, May 15th. When a bill has 1,815 pages, it is almost impossible to grasp how many radical and dangerous things can be buried in it. I've already devoted one podcast in general to an overview of the bill. This is the first in a series of briefings on the details of the Pelosi bill and the dangers it has for America. I will post all the briefings for you to share at gingrich360.com/Pelosi bill. While disguised as the next COVID-19 stimulus package, it was really a bill to create a very different America, with the $3 trillion as the lure to sweeten and to some extent hide the radicalism. The Pelosi Act is full of new ways to spend money, including cash handouts to illegal immigrants, allowing illegals to work even with over 30 million Americans unemployed, funding for tax-paid abortions, and handouts to state and local governments, along with a $130 billion tax break for the richest people in high-tax states and cities governed by Democrats. This briefing will focus on one example of the Pelosi bill's radicalism from page 1,715, where there's a section called Pandemic Correctional Facility Emergency Response. Doesn't that just sound so normal? Pandemic Correctional Facility Emergency Response, which calls for the immediate release of vulnerable and low-risk individuals. Sounds perfect, right? Boring title, vulnerable, low risk. What's the complaint? The provision actually puts the burden of proof for keeping someone locked up on the government. In fact, the bill says, quote, the court shall, during the covered emergency period, upon motion of a covered individual or on the court's own motion, reduce a term of imposed imprisonment on that individual unless the government shows by clear and convincing evidence that the individual poses a risk of serious imminent injury to a reasonably identifiable person. But let me repeat this one part, because this is the heart of how bad this is. Quote, unless the government shows by clear and convincing evidence that the individual poses a risk of serious imminent injury to a reasonably identifiable person. So in that hearing, it doesn't really require the individual in jail to prove anything. Note that the Pelosi bill puts the entire burden of proof on the government. So the government has to walk in the room and say, I have clear and compelling evidence that this person is a serious threat to a reasonably identifiable person, or there's a presumption they can be released. Now notice, that means you have to have an identifiable person who is at risk from a serious imminent injury. This is all in the law. I'm not making any of this up. I know it sounds crazy. That is a very high standard. And you can be sure defense attorneys are going to go all out to get their clients released because the government will not be able to prove clear and compelling evidence that someone is dangerous to a reasonably identifiable person. Now, frankly, given the Democratic Party's long history of releasing murderers and dangerous people, going all the way back to Governor Dukakis and his weekend furlough program, which allowed murderers to get out of jail routinely, it should not be surprising that the bias is pro-criminal and anti-law enforcement. With George Soros' financial support, anti-law enforcement, pro-criminal district attorneys are being elected all over the country. They campaign on the pledge not to enforce the law. The Pelosi bill just contains an additional step in the direction of trusting the criminal and putting the innocent at risk. However, that bias carries real risks with it. The way the act is written, it would allow for the following people to apply to get out of prison and put the burden on the government to prove that they would threaten a reasonably identifiable person. Now, the people I'm going to read to you, by definition, had victims that nobody knew about. So you couldn't have found a reasonably identifiable person that these people would want to kill. Let me just give you the list of who, according to the Judiciary Committee Republicans who analyzed this, these are the kind of people that would be released. Ivan Jerome Hill, an American serial killer responsible for at least 9 murders in different suburbs of Los Angeles from 1986 to 1994. Hill dumped his victims' corpses along the East-West Highway known as California State Route 60, earning him the nickname the 60 Freeway Killer. He's 66 years old, so he clearly qualifies. Richard Lewis Hunter, born 1955, a convicted American serial killer and forger. A day laborer, Hunter raped and killed 4 elderly women in Atlanta between March and April 1986, robbing their apartments afterwards. He later pled guilty to the murders and numerous robberies and was sentenced to life in prison. Patrick Wayne Kearney, born September 24, 1939, is an American serial killer who preyed on young men in California from 1965 to 1977. He's sometimes referred to as the Freeway Killer, a nickname he shares with 2 other separate serial killers, William Bonin and Randy Kraft. Kearney may be among the most prolific serial killers in U.S. history, claiming possibly as many as 43 victims, according to law enforcement. Samuel Little is an American serial killer who was convicted in 2012 of the murder of 3 women in California between 1987 and 1989, and in 2018 of the murder of 1 woman in Texas in 1994. He claims to have killed as many as 93 people, and investigators have linked him to over 60 specific murders. He's 79. Robert Benjamin Rose, also known as the Truck Stop Killer, is an American serial killer and rapist. He was convicted for 3 murders and was slated to be tried for 2 more before charges were dropped due to the wishes of victims' families. He's 74. Dennis Lynn Rader is an American serial killer known as BTK or the BTK Strangler. Rader gave himself the name BTK. Between 1974 and 1991, Rader killed 10 people in the Wichita, Kansas metro area. Rader sent taunting letters to police and newspapers describing the details of his crimes. He's 75. Now, all these are older folks. We can presume they might even be safe to live near. But let me remind you who they were. Son of Sam, David Berkowitz, 6 dead. 60 Freeway Killer, Ivan Hill, 9 dead. BTK Strangler, Dennis Rader, 10 dead. Richard Lewis Hunter, 4 victims. The Freeway Killer, Patrick Kearney, claims as many as 43 victims. The Truck Stop Killer, Robert Ben Rhodes, claims 50 victims, convicted of 3. And Samuel Little, who the FBI confirmed involvement in 50 murders, making him the most prolific serial killer in U.S. history. These names may sound familiar because they're all serial killers, and they're all over the age of 50, which makes them eligible for prison release under the Pelosi bill's provisions. Serial killers, eligible for prison release. Collectively, they've killed at least 172 innocent people. Many were given life sentences, and now, thanks to Speaker Pelosi's radicalism, they'd be eligible to apply to get out of prison. Imagine the reaction of the 172 families whose loved ones suffered at the hands of these killers. If you see a left-wing Pelosi Democrat who voted for this bill, you might tell them that they need to help protect the American people, not let deadly serial killers out of prison. There are a number of other radical provisions in the Pelosi $3 trillion bill, and we'll get to them in a series of briefings. You'll be able to read them all at gingrich360.com/PelosiBill.